You can hear our show on Stitcher Smart Radio. Stitcher allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly from your iPhone, Android phone, BlackBerry, or Palm phones. On demand and on the go. Don't have Stitcher? Download it for free today at Stitcher.com or in the app stores. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. You're watching Fanboy Versus with your hosts, J.D. Church, Nicole Hale, Chris Triplett, and Chris McFeely.
And you are watching Fanboy Versus. I am your host, J.D., joined this week by Chris Triplett and Nicole Hale. Welcome.
Hello.
Yes. So, it is Fanboy Versus the No McFeely. Because we have no McFeely.
We're McFeely-less.
We are, yes. We have lost that lovin' McFeely. Whoa.
I don't think that's going to be a top 10 hit. I'm
McFeely.
Telling you right now.
We've lost that lovin' McFeely. No.
Oh, we're starting off great, aren't we?
Woo! Fired up, ready to go. So, anyway, yes, so we're going to talk about some things this week, a few comics, not real burner style type stuff this week, but good things nonetheless. We have, I believe, come to the consensus that we are going to talk about Batman Year One at the end of this show because we put it off far too long, and even though Chris isn't here, he can just miss out. So that's good for him. There really isn't any news this week. Is there anything? I don't think so.
John Lennon comic coming out.
There's a John Lennon comic coming out. And 25% of the cast of this show is really excited about it.
Yeah. Can you guess which one?
Can you guess how many that is and who? I'm not saying it's going to be bad, but...
Walking Dead, season 3.
I will review it. When it comes.
And Walking Dead is getting a season 3. Why is that?
It's amazing because like we got all that news about how the producers or the writers got fired is what happened, and everybody's like, oh god, this season's gonna suck, and they're cutting costs. So well, it's coming back, season 3. Yay! I wonder if they'll put any money into it now.
Shows don't need writers. Look at Heroes.
Of course.
Oh,
it did what? 5 years. Exactly.
It went on for 2.5 more years than it should have. Okay, so, let's see, what else? Blah, blah, blah. Brian said Daredevil was good. I don't think that's quite news. So,
he can... Damn, I missed Daredevil this week, too. Shoot. Man. It was a good week of comics, and I did not
Chris didn't actually get physical comics this week. He actually got all paper comics. Or digital comics instead of paper comics. I was trying to say digital instead of paper, and I just put it all together. So how was that? How was your digital experience before we get into your reviews thereof?
I like it. I mean, it works. You know, that's the number one thing about it. It navigates pretty good. The only problems I got with it, of course, is price, because, you know, for me, and I'm just a stick in the mud, I just disagree that the digital should cost as much as the print, because I just feel like...
I believe that, too. Though.
I mean, they're not shipping those. They're not printing them out. I mean, they're just out there on a website. You know what I mean?
It's, right.
Come on. Knock a dollar off, for God's sake.
You know who would disagree would be McFeely.
Yeah, I know.
And that's the whole reason. I think from a retailer standpoint, I think that, you know, that's a good thing. Just to... I mean, you had a different reason why you were doing that, you know, why you had
I understand why they got to cost the same. I just don't like it, is all I'm saying.
Oh, okay. Well, yes. But that's...
I can't really say anything negative about it, just like that. And also, it would be kind of nice if there was a way to access them without being connected to the internet. I mean, I know we're just about everybody's connected like all the time now, but you know, what if I live in, say, my little crappy town that doesn't have internet everywhere and I just want to read my comics, you know?
Yeah, you would think that there needs to be some kind of like, you know, DRM-less solution to that. I mean, you know, that would be the thing. If you're going to pay for, you know, pay that much for it, you kind of want to own it and be able to take it wherever.
But it's pretty cool. I mean, the quality of it's nice. You can see it really well. It's got different ways you can view it. You can either view it as how you're holding a comic in front of you, or you can even kind of do the thing where you can do panel by panel, and it's almost like those motion comics, except for it doesn't have the motion and the crappy sound effects. But
Brian,
it's cool.
Brian's correcting me. It's not DRM. It's just that they keep them on the host side, that you're not physically downloading it, you're reading it onto the server.
It's like you buy them and then you have access to them through your account,
Mm-hmm.
Which it makes sense why they have to do it that way. I'm just nitpicking when I say that I wish there was a way to access it if I didn't have internet connection. And I only say that because my ISP sometimes goes down, and it's a pain when you have stuff that has that kind of DRM type thing where you have to be connected to the internet all the time to view it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Alas. Alas.
But otherwise, it's not bad.
Okay. Cool.
It's a good, what is it, resource if you need it. Because I remember I did that with Justice League. I went on Comixology.
I was not able to go get my comics this week. I just ran into all kinds of logistic problems this weekend, and I just couldn't go. So I basically have to travel like an hour to my comic shop and an hour back. So it's a 2-hour drive just to get comics. So basically I have to plan around it. It just didn't work out this week. I'll be getting my comics in time for next week's show. But this week it's just, I thought, well, okay, I've not bought anything digitally, so why don't I just try it, this time, and I can just, get them and read them and everything. So I basically just did this like today because I was like, hey, I need to read some comics. We're doing a comic podcast today.
Yeah, it might help. It's easier to talk about comics if you've read them. So,
but I recommend it so far. Like, if anybody's not gone a comic shop, it's a good substitute. And it's neat that, how we were talking about DC's doing day and date with their digital stuff. Marvel is, for some of their books, because Wolverine and X-Men is the book that I bought, it was day and date. And Amazing Spider-Man was day and date. But they're not doing it for, all of their books. It's not, the whole thing.
That's one thing I complain about. Yeah.
It would have been cool if maybe, I don't know if they're doing it for, Avengers Academy. Say I miss an issue of Avengers Academy. It'd be great if that was there. Mm-hmm. If Marvel could go full on board with day and date with all their comics, that would be great. But it seems like it's just, their big books that they're pushing right now, which Wolverine and X-Men would be a big one, and I guess Amazing Spidey.
I think they'll eventually get there. I think the market pressure will get such that they will eventually get there with everything. But I think it's still kind of newish, and it's still not required. So I think they're kind of tentatively kind of playing it to see how it'll go. So I think they'll come along. Awesome. So that's the news.
Yeah, there's not much of news.
No.
Newsflash. Comics joins the 21st century news.
Yeah.
I think it's pretty much everyone was playing Batman, this week. No one cares about
God,
the
yes.
Yeah, everybody's been playing Arkham City. Is it still good?
News story, Arkham City. It's badass. Play it.
Yeah.
I don't even have a game console.
So
I think I'm close to the end, though. So one negative is I think it's kind of short. Short as in your story, but still there's lots to do because it's kind of Grand Theft Auto-ish where you've got side missions.
Yeah.
You do this thing and go do that thing, but it doesn't diminish it because even if it's about over, it's I've still got plenty of things to do in it, and it's been a great game. It's really rarely is there a game that I'd say that's probably worth buying day one, but I think that's a game that probably is.
Yes. So, okay. well, crap. Nothing else to talk about. So, I guess we'll get into reviews then. I think, we're going to talk about Batman Year One at the end. If you haven't watched it yet, why not? And,
Go see it.
I guess go see it and then come back and listen to my review. But we will talk about comics in the meantime. And I guess we'll let Nicole then start.
You want me to go first?
Okay. Off.
Well, I'll just do a quick mention.
I don't know why. I'm just going out of order because McFeely's not here. And it just,
we're just going to make it up this week.
I know. I'm like every, I'm like, you know, I'm all thrown off. So, yeah.
All right. Well, I'll just do a little quick mention here. Ninja Turtles came out again. Again, awesome. Third, a month in a row. Just we'll pick it up. That's all I got to say. So there's my quick little mention on Turtles. You guys said, wait, Triplet, you said that you picked up the first issue finally, right?
Yeah, I got the first and the second issue. I haven't got around to finishing the second one, but I like it so far. I mean, there's not much that's happened. They're sort of building to it, but I like the idea of that there's Raphael separated from them, and there's this building to where he's missing. They're going to have to find him, and then there's also the stuff that's going around with what he's doing. But it's I'm interested to see what's going, because like the last thing I read was where they were going to be attacked by a cat. Was that in the first issue?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I'm interested to see where that's going. I guess the cat's going to like steal Raphael, and that's what's going to happen.
Yeah, so you have some questions that are answered in the third one, and there's a big fight between two of the turtles in here. So, ooh.
Oh, no.
Things are getting heavy.
Uh-oh. It's going crazy.
Total action.
Yeah. I'm going to do a random review because you guys like it when I do that. So, this one is called Hell Dorado. Yay. Just for the title alone,
Dorado. I see what they
Hell
did
Dorado.
There.
Hell Dorado. Yeah. I'll just, you know, I'll go look at the cover. I just showed it to the camera, but it says East meets West. So, yes, it is a kind of a gunslinger Western. Just to let you know, there is, because of the timing of this book, there is some racial slurs. So if you guys are offended by that, might not be the best thing to
like
pick
up. What kind of Rachel's? I don't say them. I'm just asking, like, what?
No, it has to do with the Old West being settled. They're in Texas. And, of course, there's the whites against the Chinese right now. And they each have their separate...
So it's, like, slurs based on, I guess, society for that time period.
Society at that time.
They
do use it a lot, so if you guys are offended by wording, this isn't for you.
just skip past this part of the podcast. And
I won't say him. I won't say him. But they find a dead man, and they're trying to wonder what's got to him. It doesn't look like murder, but it doesn't look like it's animalistic either. They're trying to figure what kind of animal would tear this guy apart. Basically, this town is... they're trying to settle during there's a bunch of settlements, and the railroad's coming through, and there is one gal who's well-off to do, who has the last piece of land, but she will not settle because, well, she's got this land because she inherited it because her father was killed. And that's the whole basis on this book, is around her father being murdered. They can't figure out who did it or what did it. It just happened. And of course, you have the whites blaming the Chinese and the Chinese blaming the whites because this guy was, everyone liked this man. So for someone to go out and kill him, don't know what's going on. So someone's going out and they're trying to bribe her for the land, basically. And a lot of issues come into play. Again, a lot of, you've got some gangsters. So you see a lot of fisticuffs fighting, you know, and a lot of knife fights. But this is where it takes a turn. You're just like, okay, all of a sudden you see a kind of like a zombie effect. Some kind of witch hunt is on. So you got zombies and a witch. And that's where So you've got the East and the West, and they're trying to build this railroad. But then at the very end, it comes into a supernatural play. So you're just like, okay. So this is only one of three. So they've got to wrap this up within three.
So
it's a mini series. Is that what it is?
Yeah. And so it's all based around this murder of this well-off-to-do landowner. and between the gangsters and the Orientals and the supernatural, you don't know who is involved with this murder. So that's what the whole thing is trying to figure out this murder. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's very...
Woohoo!
Okay.
It takes very different turns. The artwork is very nice. Very nice. Kind of graphic. But, yeah, I don't know where it's going is the thing. Because, like I said, it goes from a Western to supernatural. You're like, huh, okay, I did not...
Well, you know, I'm quite partial to Western supernatural stories. I think that's actually a pretty good
setting. Yeah, I mean, I like that kind of setting. You know, yeah.
Yep. I like Cowboys and Aliens. Love that story.
Played, there's the tabletop Deadlands? Is that
Deadlands.
What?
Yeah, Deadlands. Yeah, I play Deadlands. So
yeah.
So, yeah, it's like I said, you're thinking of this, oh, it's this nice little Western mystery. And then just at the very end, you see a witch and some zombies. And you're just like, did not see that coming.
Weird.
Yeah, so, you know, for a three-parter, I might pick up the other two, just so I know what the hell's going on. But it's got me interested. But the thing is, I was like, C. Michael Hall. That sounds really familiar. But
yeah.
I'm thinking Michael C. Hall. They're two different people.
Yeah. That's why it sounds familiar.
Yeah. He's the one that wrote it. Martin Coccolo did the art, and the colors were by Diego Rodriguez. So, and like I said, the art in here is just beautiful. Very, very colorful, very detailed. And this is what another thing is. They have like this little stopwatch on like almost each page. So they're counting down to something. They don't know what.
Oh, so it's never good when they're counting down.
Yeah, counting down is usually not good.
And it's a cool little stopwatch. And so you're like, ooh, okay, what's going on, you know? Something's
going to happen. They're not counting down to Christmas, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, that's usually not the case. It's usually not. And everybody gets a present.
No. It is kind of graphic. It does have some harsh language in it. It's not for everyone. But right now, it's piqued my interest. Again, Western, supernatural. It's all for me.
Gotta be one. So.
Who put it out? Like what company?
This is
Ape
Entertainment. Ape Entertainment.
I don't know who that is. I don't think I've heard of
it. I don't
them.
Know.
Okay.
I don't know if you. There's a little logo. Yeah. So
can't
just
see it.
So yeah, it's something that was just up on the shelf. I'm like, you know, I got my Dark Tower on a hiatus right now, so pick up this for. Yeah, because they're in between series, so.
Gotcha.
So if you like Dark Tower, you like this stuff.
Okay, cool.
Huh.
We're actually going to take a quick break, and then we'll be right back. So
Okay. Stay
tuned.
Hey, everybody, it's your old friend John DeLuna, and do you like video games? Do you like people who like video games? Well, if so, you gotta listen to New Soundwave. It's the weekly video game podcast of record. News, rumors, in-depth discussion of new and retro gaming, plus the occasional contest or giveaway. So if you game, you gotta listen to New Soundwave. Check us out at tfradio.net, a proud member of the Transformers Internet Radio Network.
The third strike, you're on the street, fight a three.
And we are back. So, Chris, it is your turn, sir. What did you read this week?
Yay. Well, I actually read two comics, but the one I'm going to talk about this week is Wolverine and the X-Men number one.
I think I saw this show. Was it like the show? Is it based on the show?
No, not really.
You didn't have like...
There's no Professor X from the future looking like Zordon giving the X-Men order.
You know? I never understood the premise of that. It was always like, so let me get this straight. He's in the future, and he's talking to the X-Men in the past. Isn't that impossible, like, on four levels?
It's not as bad as it sounded. It was actually a pretty good show. I liked it.
But this is not that, than what you're saying.
This is totally not that. Which, you know, I could definitely see the comparison. Because,
so what's the
that,
point? That's no fun.
Well, last week I talked about the last issue of Uncanny X-Men. So they ended that book. Well, they ended that book, and they sort of didn't end that book, because, hey, that book's coming back next week with a brand new number one. But before they do that, they're doing brand new number one of Wolverine and the X-Men. So now you're going to have to buy another X-Men book if you want to keep up with all your favorite X-Men.
Oh, man, I hate it when that happens.
Yeah. I kind of hate it, but also I kind of like it because, okay, what's going on is for Wolverine, you're getting, what is his name? Jason Aaron writing, which I believe he did Schism, and I like Schism pretty good, which is the lead into this split of the X-Men. Chris Bocciolo is doing the art, which I've always liked Chris Bocciolo's art. It's really weird and doesn't really look like much of anybody else's art that's out there. I mean, it stands out when you see it. And I think we're going to still keep getting, what's her name? Karen? Help me out here. McFeely's writer that he loves.
Karen Gillan.
Karen Gillan.
She's going to be doing Uncanny X-Men. So that's a pretty good trade-off. You're getting two decent, you know, pretty awesome writers doing two X-Men books. The X-Men are great characters when they've got good writers, you know? But,
you know, that's probably true of a lot of of comics.
Well, I mean, like, characters. Like, the X-Men are good characters. It's just that you can kind of tell when it all falls apart when, like, you give them to, you know, people that are
Jeff
doing...
Loeb.
Like, Jeff Loeb? Well, yeah. I don't think
Grant
he's
Morrison?
Ever done... No,
Grant Morrison was good. Okay, let's see. Scott Lobdell?
Yeah, possibly.
I'm just naming off... I'm just naming off crappy people. I'm sorry.
But to the actual comic, the whole point of it is that there was a split. Wolverine and Cyclops basically had a disagreement on how to lead the X-Men. Cyclops is preparing them for war. Wolverine thinks that it should be more of a Skull type thing, like, you know, how it all started, teaching the mutants how to use their powers and, you know, all that, you know, good stuff like they did back in the 60s.
So for those of us that haven't paid attention to X-Men in, like, 20 years, you're going to be like, are we in Bizarro X-Men world? What happened?
You might think that because this comic is, like, wacky as shit. Like, I wasn't expecting it because, okay, you got a comic called Wolverine and the X-Men. I expect it to be, you know, Wolverine's going to be, like, the guy that's, like, going to be like killing people, and these are like his, you know, little group of X-Men assassins or something, because they always portray Wolverine as, like, you know, this stone cold killer type of a character. No, it's goofy as shit.
He's not.
Think of this.
He's on every freaking Marvel team.
Yeah, I mean,
he doesn't have time to do goofy stuff. He has to show up and be like, all right, I'm here. Who do we attack? Okay, I'm good. Look, I got a thing and I'll be back. you know, and then he's on to like New Avengers.
Like, think of Wolverine as the guy that you never gave any responsibility to, and he just sort of did his own thing. He showed up, he beat the bad guy, and then he went back and he just drank a beer. He can't do that now. He's now the headmaster of a school.
How does he have time for all this? I swear. He's like, I've got a school meeting at 3 o'clock. I've got a New Avengers meeting at 5. You know, I've got an X-Men thing. God, he needs like he must have like an iPhone or something to keep track of his schedule, because he's got a lot to do.
In fact, I think he has an X phone. Hey.
See what you did there. Nice.
Yep.
I swear he was in all my comics this week, too. Between Wolverine and Captain America, those two guys are, like, busting hump to be in every freaking comic.
Yeah.
Anyway,
But this was actually a good comic. I mean, it was a very good comic. Basically, what's happening is this issue takes place. It's the first day of the school opening up. And the school is it's actually – he named it after Jean Grey. It's
of course he did.
Jean Grey – yeah, of course. You know, he loves Jean Grey. We know it. We found that out. It's the – let's see. The Jean Grey School for Higher Learning. And the whole point of the story for the first issue is, since it's a school, they've got to get a visit from the New York State Department of Education. They've got to inspect the school. So the issue is basically Wolverine and Kitty Pryde, who are both the headmasters. He made Kitty one of the headmasters also, taking these two people on a tour through this new school. Hilarity ensues. You can basically see that that's going to happen. They're there to just inspect it to make sure that it's safe. But think about it. It's a school where the X-Men are living and teaching younger mutants. There's nothing safe about this school. Just like some like quick things that's going on. The people from the Department of Education, they're already kind of biased about it because they know the X-Men. They know that, hey, every day, like, you know, the X-Men, wherever they live, like, their building's probably going to explode and a Sentinel's going to attack them or something. So they're already ready to write off this school and say, oh, you know, we're not going to approve this. But there's just, like, the funny thing about it is just, like, all the little sight gags in it. Like, as they're taking them through the tour, you see, like, student registration, and the guy that's doing the student registration is Goop from X-Force.
Oh, God.
Which is this – I don't know if you've ever met X-Force, but he's basically this little – this glob of you know, this globby thing, you know? And whenever he talks, like, his language makes no sense. It's like, you know, symbols. So I'm thinking, okay, this guy's the student registration guy, and he's, like, talking to these people, and these people look so confused when he's talking to them. He runs into a class, like as he's showing off the classes, one of the classes is inside of a room where Rachel Gray is teaching a class of students, but they're just standing there. They're not doing anything. And one of the education people says, oh, you know, they're all going to get A's for standing still. And then as it shows inside the room, she's actually teaching them how to block psychic defenses, you know, and they don't know it because obviously, you know, she's talking to them psychically, and it's great because there's like a little scene where she's like, again, guard your minds or I will pillage your deepest, darkest secrets. Ah, I see we have a bedwetter among us. And then this poor guy just kind of puts his head back like this.
Oh, no.
Wow.
They get new students that haven't been in an X-Men before. One of the new students is a brood, which if you know anything about the X-Men, the brood is sort of like aliens, you know, from like James Cameron's Aliens movies, but they're X-Men villains. And so there's this kid that's a brood, and it's so funny because he's like wearing glasses, like, you know, he can't see without glasses or something, and he's getting bullied by some other mutants in it. There's a scene where there's a janitor that's like cleaning up the school because the school's still kind of under construction, and it turns out that the janitor of the school is Toad.
Oh,
so
God.
If you know anything about X-Men, like he's like a Brotherhood of Evil Mutants member, and there's just like just this funny little scene where like they're, you know, taking these people from the education board down through the school, and Toad is trying to talk to Wolverine while he's trying to keep them busy and making sure that the day's not a complete waste. And Toad's like, you know, there's some crazy stuff going on around here. He says, Mr. Logan, I just need to talk to you a second. There's all this rumbling, and I couldn't sleep. My whole room was shaking, and there was lava. There was lava coming out of the walls. And I didn't even get a bed yet. Normally, that wouldn't be a problem. You know, I don't mind sleeping on the floor, but, well, there was lava on the floor. And, like, Wolverine's just kind of trying to blow him off, you know. It's just, you know, he's like, you know, shut up, Toad, you know, because he doesn't want them to know about it. It turns out that... it's just a funny – it's like – it seems like this will be the X-Men book that will be fun. Like, you know, I'm not sure what the Uncanny X-Men book will be like. Maybe it will be more of the straight, you know, serious tone to it. But so far, this book is hilarious. Every turn, this is, like, turning out to be the worst day. Like, there's a scene where you know, the Danger Room. The Danger Room is usually just a room by itself set up for the X-Men to train in. Well, this particular school is designed where the entire school is a danger room.
Oh, my God.
And, of course, nothing works right. And like, so basically they're trying to, you know, convince these people that the school's safe and all this, and everything's going wrong. And Wolverine's basically like, well, we're going to have to depend on Beast. Beast is going to have to be the saving grace. You know, when we get to Beast, he'll make everything right because he's a genius and everything. So they enter Beast's lab, and like the first thing you see is he's wearing all this equipment over his head, and he's saying, "Coffee! If I don't get more coffee in my gut post haste, I will commit to tossing bodies out the window." Like, it's like the worst scene ever for these people. I mean, they're like having like the worst showing for the school ever. And they're talking about, like, you know, oh, Beast, you know, could you tell us some of the more interesting things about going on in this school? And please, you know, don't make them sound awful. And he's like, oh, and, you know, and another mystery to add to the list. Did I also happen to mention that 2 days ago, I accidentally left a dimensional gateway open, that the entire building is likely now infested with interdimensional gremlins. You know, typical first day of school sorts of problems. Hello, who are these lovely people?
Oh, my God. No.
So it's like the book is just it's hysterical and it's funny, and by the end of that, of course, you know, those people from the Department of Education, like, of course we're not going to, you know, recommend you guys, and they're leaving, and as they're leaving, the school is actually, remember the lava and the earthquakes that Toby was talking about? Well, it turns out that the school is being swallowed by a giant monster's mouth at the end of the issue. I mean, that's
how. Oh my God.
So it's like the worst first day of school ever. And then you turn the page and just, you know, a couple of quick little things, and then we can move on to the, you know, the next person. It's just, there's so much stuff in this issue that it's just, I feel like it had to be talked about. There's a page at the end where it talks about the classes that they're going to have at this school. And they're just, some of them are just fantastic. World History, 1880 to 1950, an eyewitness account by Headmaster Logan.
Oh my God.
Let's see. How to weaponize household products with Professor Remy LeBeau.
Oh geez.
Algebra sucks, I know, but you still have to learn it with Professor Bobby Drake.
Oh my God.
And probably my favorite of them all is, let's see, Know Your Alien Races and How to Kill Them with Professor Lockheed. Lockheed is Kitty Pryde's pet dragon. How is he going to teach a class?
Oh, my God. That's hilarious.
And there's, like, tons of these things. It's just, it's so great. And if the rest
sounds
of this
sounds like Hogwarts book, for X-Men.
Yeah, it really does.
If this book continues this tone, oh my God, this could be my favorite book ever. I will totally be buying this book. I didn't have money for an extra X-Men book, but my God, I want to buy this book. It's so good.
I have to say, I'm kind of mildly interested now.
I'm interested in this, yeah.
It's really good. And they actually, they show, like, you know, like how TV shows, when, like, it's a new TV show, they'll have, like, a teaser, like a montage of stuff that's going to happen in the season.
Mm-hmm.
They have a montage of what's going to happen in the season of X-Men. It says, like, things to come. And in the montage is, like, crazy stuff. Like, for some reason, Frankenstein's monster in the corner. In another corner, there's a whole bunch of alien broods chained up like they're, you know, being abused or something. In the center of it, there's Kitty Pryde in a hospital bed with, like, tubes in her, like, you know, getting blood transfusion. And inside of those tubes are tiny X-Men in spacesuits. What the hell is going to happen this season?
Oh, my God.
Oh, my gosh.
It's like Grant Morrison came back to X-Men. This book sounds great. You know?
Okay, I've got to start picking this one up. Damn it, I cannot afford more stuff.
It's first issue. So it's highly, highly recommended. I cannot wait for the second issue to see where they're going with. I think that the thing that's eating the skull, by the way, is Krakatoa, the island that walks like a man.
Oh,
I don't know if you guys know about X-Men, but then Giant Size X-Men number one, they go to this island, and this island basically captures the X-Men. I think it's Krakatoa, the island that walks like a man. That's my prediction, which I think would be awesome if that's true. But yeah, wow. Great book. It's really surprised me.
Nice.
I'm done.
Oh, that sounds okay. Very interesting.
Wow, yeah.
I've definitely got to go check it out now.
I really hope Nick Billy read it, because I would love to hear what he says about it.
Yeah. Cool. All right. So I guess that's on to me then. I am going to do two fairly quick reviews, just skimming over a few interesting points. And then I'm going to do a full review of Spider Island. So two things I want to talk about real quick. Two. New Guardians, 52. This is Kyle Rayner's book. I mean, the main thrust of the story is basically the other members of the other light cores trying to get their rings back for their cores. So they spend most of the issue fighting Kyle. That's not terribly interesting, but St. Walker shows up to, and actually is the only one of the group that's actually going to help Kyle. They go back to Oa because Oa thinks that Gantha can help him. But Gantha has basically been completely brainwashed by the other guardians and purged of all his emotional content. So now he's just basically like a regular guardian now.
So he's sort of like an emotionless guardian, just like the rest of them.
Right? Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, he's basically no different than the other guardians now. But the other guardians are really pissed off, and they really want to figure, and they really are not happy with Kyle having all these rings floating around him. And as the guardians sort of go for him, the all of the rings jump on his hand.
No.
So now he has all 7 rings.
So he must really look like the pimp daddy.
So yeah. is he Ion now?
He's not even like Ion. I don't know. It happens at the very end of the issue. He basically gets like the welcome from all the other core rings, but he's got this like suit on that's like gray tone, but it has the symbols of all the cores on it, one on each shoulder.
Did he get a black lantern ring? Does he get that also?
No, he doesn't have black or white, but he does have all the colors in between. Okay. So yeah, he's got this like crown thing where the Indigo tribe symbol is, and the sort of Sinestro core style like gauntlet things, and yeah. And the next issue is supposed to be Guardians versus New Guardians, so maybe we'll figure out what this New Guardians thing is.
Yeah.
In the third issue,
I wonder if he'll actually be like the New Guardians, like just by himself.
Yeah, he'll be it. So yeah, and Headmaster John said it reminds him of the I think it's Predator. Predator's the. It does very much look like the sort of the Predator costume. That the I think that's what it was, wasn't it? Predator.
The alien.
No, from
Arnold Schwarzenegger.
No. The entity of the Sapphire Lantern.
Oh yeah. I know what you're talking. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. And there's also another point in that, which is that Larf Lees isn't anywhere around, and there's only one orange ring, and now Kyle has it. So it sort of begs the question as to where Larf Lees is now, and if he's dead or something, I'm going to be really pissed off because love Larf Lees.
Maybe he can make other rings, because you know, like Sinestro made a ring.
He wouldn't do that.
Yeah, no, he wouldn't do that. Well, maybe
that's the whole point of the Orange Lantern thing, is there's only one ring, so.
So maybe it made the ring itself. Maybe like it has something to do with that. I don't know. Because if Larf Lees doesn't have the ring, I'm gonna be pissed off.
Yeah, or at least if he's not around. I mean, if he's dead or something, I'm gonna be way pissed.
Yeah.
Because I love Larf Lees. So FF. This is issue. This is I know. That's so funny.
He loves Santa Claus and
he
Christmas.
Does, I know, and Christmas is coming up. I need another Larf Lees issue for Christmas.
They need a Halloween issue where he goes trick or treating, but he trick or treats for
others. That would be
God,
fun.
That would be awesome. Make that happen.
Miss opportunities everywhere. Yeah. So FF, we're gearing up for the big showdown here, because next issue is issue 12 of FF. It's also what would be issue 600 of Fantastic Four. Now, let's see, if I'm trying to figure out, there is going to be a Fantastic Four 5th anniversary issue, which is 104 pages long. There is also going to be FF number 12.
Really?
That's what it appears to be.
So they're going to do 2 separate comics.
Yes, not just there's going to be Fantastic Four is going to be issue 600, and then 1 week later will be FF 12. If I had to guess, it's going to be the end of FF, and then it will start up Fantastic Four again. But it's Spider-Man on the cover. It's Spider-Man on one cover, and then Johnny's on the other cover. But the other cover is more of a retro. So I don't know. Anyway, it's interesting. This is really gearing up for the fit hitting the Shan, and we've kind of been building up to a few of the elements that are in this comic, namely the Annihilation, Annihilus gearing up to break through into Manhattan. And we know where that's set up, so they're basically, the negative zone is basically poised to head into our world. Reed also calls in the entire Marvel Universe. Captain America is in every freaking issue of Marvel I read this week.
Hey now, he wasn't in Wolverine and X-Men number 1, I'm just saying.
Okay.
It would have been great though if you would have shown up. It's like, hey, Logan, just wanted to see how your day was going.
I know. It's like, hey, what's up? Up top.
He wasn't in Journey to Mystery.
Yeah. No, I think, and in fact, I did check Journey just in case, and he wasn't even depicted because some of the others were. There were some adventures that were depicted, but Captain America was not one of them. But he wasn't everything else. It's like now that Steve Rogers is Captain America again, everybody's like, all right, we got to throw him in our comic.
Got to do that. Damn. Post-haste.
Anyway. but the really interesting bit, I thought, out of this was that Ronan had sort of taken over as leader of the...
The Kree.
The Kree, thank you. And within his hammer, I think we had seen the images before that there was like an essence of the Supreme War that was placed inside his hammer. And so they had captured the remaining two alternate universe Reeds. And so he released like this essence of the Supreme War, which immediately started to tap into both Reeds' minds and then kicked them into like the engine. For the Forever City. And they basically were reformed into the new Supreme War.
Hey now.
Yeah.
Uh-oh.
Supreme War is back, which is not good news. That is bad. But yeah. And now because he's formed out of stuff from the alternate realities, now he has an even more expanded mind. So,
and he is the minds of two alternate Reed Richardses. My God, he's unstoppable.
Yeah. And then the issue ends with the Kree attacking. So, Earth. Yeah. So that's going to be bad. So basically, issue 600 of Fantastic Four, and then FF is going to be really wacky. So we've been building up to this point for a year, and it's almost here. It's going to be crazy. And then Johnny will come back somewhere in the middle of that. I would imagine
Johnny's
once that...
dead, though. He can't come back.
Well,
that never
sort
happens
of
in comic books.
Dead-ish, you know.
I thought for a minute that you were going to say, like, and Johnny got turned into Supreme War.
Yeah, that would
something.
Be really crazy, wouldn't it?
That's how he comes back. He's Supreme War.
The only other thing I'll mention also real quick before I get to is Avengers Academy. Again, you know, really great character-driven story, mostly around Vale and her deciding to leave. Speedball also leaves, as does Freedom Fighter, whatever his name is. Freedom something or other. I can't remember.
Why are they leaving? Was there like some sort of fallout or something?
No, I think for most of them, it's just like, well, for Vale, it's more about she just, you know, she... The way she envisioned being an Avenger is totally different than what it's actually like. And she just can't deal with it. She can't deal with killing people. Because it's not that she's bothered by killing them. She's bothered by not being bothered about it. Like, it really creeps her out that she killed people and that it doesn't really bother her. So she actually decides to go work for What's-His-Face that was around a few issues back that started his own company and had killed some people to make a point. But the big news out of it basically is that Hank has decided to not rebuild the Infinite Mansion, and he's actually relocating the school to the old West Coast Avengers. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So they're moving out to California, because that's the place you ought to be.
Speaking of Avengers Academy, something I didn't mention about Wolverine and X-Men is they talk about on that same thing about the classes they're going to take,
mm-hmm.
a special event in which they were going to have some sort of annual, let's see, no, it says an inaugural flag football game against
yes!
the Avengers Academy.
I was going to ask awesome. That question. I was like, so does this mean we're going to see sports games between the Avengers Academy and yeah. the Jean Grey School of Higher, I mean, it's like, that's going to be awesome.
If that's actually in the issue, that would be fantastic. That could be the greatest crossover ever.
So,
oh, that would be yeah. awesome.
So, but yeah, Lightspeed is, but they're expanding the school actually. So there's a bunch of new students as well. They're showing up to be a part of the new Avengers Academy. Lightspeed was mentioned by Dawn. She's going to be in this. So we've got one member of the Power Pack that's on FF. Another that's going to be in Avengers Academy. It's good stuff. So, yeah. So Academy continues to be good. Anyway, all right. Enough dawdling around. Let's talk about Spider-Man. Spider
the
Island.
Epic conclusion to Spider Island.
The epic
Island.
Conclusion-ish, because we've still got the epilogue. But I don't think much more could happen in the epilogue has happened to this.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't want to go through shot for shot on this, but man, talk about, you know, again, he sort of brought these two forgotten characters together again, Spider-Queen and the Jackal, and he managed to bring them in, make an interesting story out of it, and then get rid of both of them. And, like, now we're, like, done with those characters, and we don't have to worry about them ever again. But Spider-Man and Kane basically saved the day. There's a couple of fun bits in here. I like when they did the they're trying to get back into like Lab 6 where Peter was, where Peter and Kane were, and they're trying to figure out what to do because like Kane is there naked, looking like Peter, of course, with long hair. That's going to be hard to explain.
With long hair,
right?
Yeah, which doesn't make sense.
Right, that would be hard to explain. So Peter's like, all right, switch clothes. So they trade clothes.
Like,
and now,
yeah, you be Spider-Man, I'll be Peter Parker.
You be Spider-Man, I'll be Peter Parker. Which leaves Peter standing there in his underwear. Which is fine, because we had already established with that Peter had made it seem as though he commonly works in his underwear. And so this is... So there's this whole great conversation where he's like, explains like, oh no, this is normal. It's just a little eccentricity thing. He works in his underwear.
Yeah.
So, and Reed's like, okay. So, so Spider-Man and Kane go off to face the Spider-Queen. Now she's gotten really big and huge because she's basically, you know, feeding off of the essence of all of these spiders. And
she's literally a queen of the super spider people now. She's like she's like the queen alien or something now. She's creepy as hell looking.
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
And she's enormous, and of course everybody's trying to fight her. MJ shows up to save the day with Peter and actually pulls him out of like part of the fight because Peter goes back to his costume and then gives Kane the Psionic costume. Because
there's a great scene that we skipped over in which like MJ shows up and she's like saved all these people and like Ben's like, now that's what I'll call a Spider Woman, and Spider Woman says,
yeah,
stand right here.
Oh yeah. Ben's like, oh sorry. He apologizes for that like three times in this issue too, which is kind of funny. Yeah. But there's some interesting things, and I'll say interesting and go back on it later. Where between Peter and MJ, because in one essence, like Peter, you know, is having this whole conversation where with himself and with her, where he's like, you know, I'm trying to fight this and I don't know how to fight it. And MJ reminds him, she's like, you're smart, build something, save the day. And he's like,
yeah,
oh yeah, I'm smart.
smart.
You know, it's like, he has to remember
that. I'm educated.
Well, he has to remember that every once in a while. I mean, again, he's so used to like, you know, trying to fight when he's Spider-Man that he forgets that he's not only really smart, but he has access to all this stuff. And he remembers something very important because Smythe had even tried to tell him he has all the spider cellulars he needs. And he remembers Doc Ock's little spider bots. So yeah.
And that goes back to what, like the beginning?
Oh,
the
very
the
beginning.
Time?
Yeah, and again,
yes,
so this
so
is
great.
This is brilliant stuff again out of Dan Slott where so Peter, you know, finds the biggest broadcasting tower he can, which is on top of that's not the Chrysler building. I can't remember where the Empire State Building.
Is it Empire State?
Yes, Empire State Building.
They made a big deal out of it because he couldn't think of like where to go, and MJ says, "Well, we'll go here," and it's like the spot that they used to go to.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. That's right. Yeah. So he gets all the spider bots to grab the cure, and then as he's giving that and uses them to administer the cure to people, which weakens the Spider Queen, which is brilliant. Yeah. And I'll come back to this thing with Peter and MJ, but basically Peter saves the day that way. And then once the Spider Queen is weakened, now Peter has made a point that he doesn't want to kill the Spider Queen, right? Because nobody dies when Peter's around. Kane, on the other hand, made no such promise.
Nope.
So So, Miss Marvel, basically throws him through her head, throws Kane through her head.
Yep.
Puts his spikes out and blows the freaking back of her head out. And then all of the Avengers, like, unleash on her body and blow her up.
Beat the hell out.
Yeah. So that's it. So Peter saves the day. Kane saves the day. World, the day was saved by Spider-Man, two different Spider-Man. So I think we definitely know now that Kane
who the
is,
Scarlet Spider
yeah,
is.
That Kane is going to be the Scarlet Spider. But there's one interesting point that I have to make out of here. They, you know, I was even thinking it as I opened the issue. It's like, you know, Peter hasn't been dating MJ since, you know, what? The beginning of, you know...
Before Brand New Day.
Since before Brand New Day.
He hasn't dated her at all since Brand New Day, because that was the whole point, remember?
Yeah, and she's been on, like, every single freaking cover, and in nearly every issue.
Yeah.
And it's like, why? He's not even seeing her anymore. Like, she's a friend and nothing else. Well, there's a whole point here at which he's talking about, you know, he's saving everybody, and...
That was a great scene, because that kind of goes back to... when Jameson's wife died, mm-hmm. he said nobody else dies.
Yeah,
and go ahead and just finish your thought.
But yeah, but he's, you know, so he's disseminating the spider bots. He's curing everybody, and in the middle of this, all of these panels and frames here. I mean, there's just a beautiful layout, and you see MJ almost under her breath. I love you.
He's
like, "What was that?" And she's like, "Nothing." And you're like,
he says, no. "Yeah."
Uh-oh. And I'm like, I don't know how I feel about this. Like, I'm so torn, because it's like, you know, again, for being someone that grew up, you know, in the 90s and 90s Spider-Man, it's like MJ was, you know, it's always Peter and MJ, you know?
Yeah.
And yet I now know, and, you know, and as I've been reading Big Time and everything, you know, I've kind of gotten used to this, you know, Peter and Carly thing. And I think that, you know, it's kind of quirky and interesting and fun, and I like it. But she's his lobster, you know? And it's just like, you know?
Don't make me laugh.
That's a Friends reference for anyone that doesn't
know.
I
know, I remember.
It's a Friends reference, people. I just made a Friends reference on the show. My wife would be happy. But anyway, I mean, it's like, you know.
Just think of it like this. Okay, like, Dan Slott's done a really good job of making us, like, putting her, like, over here and progressing Peter's relationship with Carly. I mean, done a really good job to the point where, hey, Carly could stay. You know, we'd be fine with that. And then he just sort of slightly moves MJ back in there. And then we get this little scene here. It's like, oh, does this change everything now? I mean, where do we go from here?
I know, because now it's like, and she does, but they should, so torn. And then, you know, and then the issue does end on this beautiful scene where, like, Peter gives MJ his shirt, and they're, like, sitting together again on top of the Empire State Building, you know, and looking down at the street, and,
yep.
I don't know. So we'll see what happens with the epilogue. I mean, I think this is, you know, I you know, and we've talked about it before. I mean, Spider Island just completely blew FF away. It is.
I've got to pick this up and trade, because I missed out on it, and it sounded like really fun.
It's just a great crossover.
This should have been the big crossover event. I mean, I don't know how you would have done it, because it's so Spider-Man centric, you know.
Yeah,
but
it really.
This should have been Fear Itself, and Fear Itself was not good.
Well, in fact, I would say it's unfortunate that this was, like, competing with, in a way, competing with Fear Itself. You know, I think that both events probably would have been served better. You know, timeline-wise, you're only talking about... I was sort of shocked to kind of realize that the whole timeline for FF was a week. Or the Fear Itself, you know what I mean? Like, you know, reading some of the recaps and stuff, it's like, holy crap, that whole event took place in a week. You know, and this is probably the same for this, too. I mean, Spider Island takes place over the course of probably a week or so as well.
Yeah, it couldn't have been long, because everybody was progressing and they were mutating, and mm-hmm. it didn't appear like it took them that long to mutate into these creatures.
Yeah, but we know that this takes place. We know that Spider Island takes place before Fear itself, though.
Fear itself. Because of Cap, right?
Because of Cap. Because Cap's still in his Steve Rogers costume.
Yeah, and he's got his energy shield. Hey, there's Steve Rogers, who's in every comic.
Yeah.
So, he's, you know, like the little mysterious redded hooded woman of Marvel.
Yeah.
Right?
But,
except for he's like right in the front, and he's not hidden whatsoever.
No. But just... Go ahead.
One thing we skipped over, though, which I wanted to bring to the point, is like, remember how everybody was mutating and turning into spiders? And everybody got powers.
MJ, yes.
And then she, through the big moment, she got the powers, but it's like she didn't mutate in the same level that everybody else did. Well, we found out why, and it's a comedic little moment.
It's one of those. It's like one of those adults trying to explain something to kids moments, you know? Because it's basically because she received regular Parker DNA injections, she became immune to some of the Spider-Man effects.
The way Reed Richards, you know, he explains this, to put it delicately, Miss Watson, you developed an immunity from all the years of being so close with this. And the thing just you sort of laughs, and then like Spider-Man says, "Oh, Ben, grow up." it's just a funny little thing because like there was no explanation. I was like, why is she not getting the powers just like everybody else is? And then she got them, and then we get that little explanation, and it's just another little funny dance.
She has Peter Parker immunity. Well.
Oh, my goodness.
I will miss you so much.
Someday, when you kids are older, we'll explain what all that means.
So what's supposed to replace Spider Island, do you know?
Well, I mean, Spider Island has all been taking place within Amazing Spider-Man. So, I mean, it'll just go back to the primary titles. Otherwise, there were like the minis that were tie-ins, but they weren't their own series for the most part. So it'll just go back to being Amazing Spider-Man.
So next issue is, like you said, an epilogue. So we're not going straight into another story just yet. We're going to get, like, kind of the fallout.
Yeah, we'll get Spider Island. We'll get the sum up to that. So there you go, Spider Island, good stuff. Seriously, if you did not read this, do you like Nicole? Pick it up in the trade. Read it. Good stuff.
Totally Dan Slott. Get it and trade it, too. Great stuff.
Do not doubt Dan Slott.
I'm sorry I missed out on this.
No, Dan Slott is the man. You know, it's kind of cool to, you know, like I said, to have someone that's like not only a really great writer, but really passionate about Spider-Man and about how that character's handled, and to have them writing it. You know, sometimes that's bad. Like, sometimes you don't want people that are really passionate about a property, you know, writing it, Transformers comics.
Sometimes they can be too close. Yeah.
Sometimes with certain properties, it can be bad, Transformers comics. So. Yeah. You want to be careful.
What are you saying, JD? I don't get it.
So, you know, you want to really be careful of having big fanboys, Transformers, do, you know, your property. But sometimes, like Dan Slott, I mean, he just does it right. You know, other times, Transformers is just not that good. So, not to name names.
There.
I'm not going to name names for any comics, Transformers comics, but it could be.
I totally hope that, I mean, Dan's done such a good job. I mean, please just keep him as long as possible. You know?
Yes. Leave Dan Slott on.
Don't replace him.
No. Leave him on there. Holy crap, it's awesome. Unlike other comics Transformers, which are not good when written by total fanboys. So, let's talk about Batman Year 1.
Yay, here we go.
Batman Year 1. I don't even remember what happened. Triplet? Cole, you watched it recently. Tell us what happened.
How can you not remember what happened?
I mean, I do remember what happened. I mean, the gist of it is essentially it's like two stories, right? It's the I've never read Batman Year One, by the way. I'll just go ahead and come out and say that.
I never read.
Totally
it,
should.
So apparently I should, but it's sort of like I see it as like two parallel stories. You've got the story of Bruce, sort of trying to figure out what he wants to do. It's like he knows what he wants to do, but he doesn't know how to do it. I guess would be the right way to describe that.
Yeah, I mean, it basically starts with these two men that mm-hmm. they don't know each other. are coming to Gotham City for two different reasons. Mm-hmm. You know, Bruce Wayne, he's returning to Gotham City from being abroad for, I think it was 12 years. Yep. Because we know, you know, he's Batman. We know his parents died. We know he's going to be Batman.
He's training to be Batman. He just doesn't know that. Batman.
He just doesn't know it yet. Yeah.
Right.
And then like Jim Gordon coming to Gotham because he's lost his job. And I can't remember like what
some
city
other
was
cities.
At.
Yeah.
Some other city. And Gotham City, this corrupt city, is like the only place he could get a job.
Which
so he's coming there.
And even that point is ironic because he was fired basically because he was a whistleblower, right? I mean, that's essentially. Yeah. So he's fired for being a whistleblower, and then he's sent to the most corrupt precinct in the country.
I know.
You know, and so it's like, that's going to be a great fit. But, yeah. You know, but it's really the only place he could get on because he kind of got, you know, blacklisted anywhere else. You know, Gordon's wife is pregnant. As they're moving into Gotham and trying to find this new opportunity. And it's made pretty clear early on that it's like, you know, you don't really want to ruffle any feathers here. They're really nice and polite, which is always a bad sign. But it's
yeah, there's like a great meeting that he has with like the commissioner, and he's like talking to him and he's like, you know, Commissioner, I just want to let you know that, you know, honesty's not going to be a problem with me. This is what Jim Gordon says. Mm. And the commissioner says, you know, wasn't even thinking about honesty. You know,
yeah.
Honesty, it's not even on my mind. You know,
yep. I don't give a crap about honesty. What I give about is how much money I'm getting, you know, who we owe what to, who owes me, you know. Yeah. And, I mean, but, I, you know, if all you know about Jim Gordon is like, the, you know, like the Batman animated series,
all you know about Jim Gordon is, hey, there's this guy that works for the police and he turns on a light, Batman shows up and saves the day.
If that is all you know, I mean, you're just in for a shock. Like,
Jim Gordon is a ladies' man.
I mean, yeah, I mean, this goes through things that were tied into other comics as well, but I mean, you know, as far as Jim Gordon's life, which I sort of thought was the more interesting part of it, maybe. The Batman origin.
It's more Jim Gordon's story, honestly, than it feels like, than Batman's. I mean, Batman is there, and it does parallel with Gordon, but it seems like it's more Gordon.
Well,
you know,
I think it's because we know so much about Batman. I mean, Batman's one of those things where it's like that story is permeated with it. I mean, you know, especially if you followed Batman at all, which I guess I have. You know about the bat coming through the window, and you know about, you know, the parents, and you know about his training and all of those things. So those bits of the story aren't terribly interesting. There's a few things, and I'll talk about those in a second, but as far as Jim Gordon, like, that's a topic that's not talked about. I mean, again, like, you know, to like Nicole's point, it's like, that's the guy, or like you said, you know, if you're thinking of Jim Gordon, the guy that turns on the light and Batman shows up. Yeah. Wow, you know, here we see Jim Gordon in sort of like his raw element. I mean, this is definitely a dog trying to find a bone, you know, and he's doing it. He's trying to do the right thing, but yet he's in this very corrupt, you know, department. And, you know, he's not necessarily this nice grandfatherly figure. I mean, there's a whole scene where like his first partner, like threatens him, and he knows it's his partner, and like beats him up.
Fleiss. Yeah.
So what does he do? Like, he knows the only way to get any respect is to, you know, basically fight back. So he like tails the guy, spins this guy's car off the road, chases him down, and then just like he says something about it, like it's been a while since he had taken down a Green Beret.
He's got this great thing. Yeah, like he pulls a gun, like, you know, Fleiss pulls a gun on Gordon. Gordon pulls his gun, and then he drops his gun, and then Gordon's like, he's like, you know, his inner thoughts are going, and he's like, you know, it's been a while since I took down a Green Beret, but still, he could use a little bit of a handicap. So Gordon throws him the baseball bat that he used to beat him with.
Yeah.
Gordon puts his gun up, and they proceed to fight, and Gordon kicks just, his ass.
Just beats the dog snot out of him. And you're just like, what? This is Gordon, you know? And so, I mean, it goes on. It goes into Gordon's affair with one of the other officers, which, again, had been touched on by some other comics. Because he's sort of
Sarah Essen, yeah.
Yeah, right. He's sort of like working with her to on this like fine Batman task force. But yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, it's really interesting to see all of these things that Gordon goes through. On the other side, you do have the Batman story, and the two elements that I thought were really interesting out of that, at least the way that they were portrayed, is one, you see Batman, you know, you see Bruce trying to do his, like, go out on the street and fight crime thing, but he doesn't really know, again, he knows what he wants to do, but he doesn't really know how to do it.
Yeah, he makes a big point that, okay, like, his first time he goes out, he's not in a costume. He just, you know, he puts some makeup on and street clothes, and he's like, he says, I'm doing reconnaissance. And it doesn't go out too well for him because, you know, he gets shot by these corrupt cops, and he's bleeding to death, and the cops are going to take him in. Of course, because he's Batman, you know, he has the abilities to get away from them, and
But it's not just that. It's like even before that, when he, like, starts to try to fight or intimidate some people in the street, they, like, you know, they fight back. And I think through that, it's like you start to understand why, you know, Batman is really – the Batman figure is really greater than just a man, because – when you see a person in front of you, you're not really intimidated by that.
Yeah, you're not afraid of that because you know it's a man, and a man has limitations. A man can be shot and killed. A man can be stabbed, you know.
Right.
But this thing, you know, this idea, I mean, to steal something from, you know, Batman Begins, which Batman Begins stole a lot from this story.
It did. It really did. Especially the Batman part of it. Yeah, you can see the things it stole. But I think that's what's interesting, and that's even what happens to Bruce, because Bruce, I mean, he manages to get away, like you say.
Yeah.
You know, and he's shot, and he's sitting there shot, you know, in the parlor, and you get to the scene.
I love that scene.
Oh yeah. I mean, you get to one of the most iconic Batman scenes, which is the scene of, you know, him asking for a sign. But this is a completely different twist because, you know, the way that that's classically portrayed is he's just sitting there contemplating. But here he's like bleeding, and, you know, he's thinking about calling Alfred, but he knows Alfred will come, and he's trying to have this moment with his
brain. Really, really well. Where, you know, he was coming back to Wayne Mansion when Gordon was going to beat the shit out of Fleiss.
Yeah.
You know, their cars meet, you know, Gordon almost goes off the road, and Batman's bleeding to death, and he talks about, you know, I've waited like 18 years. I'd rather die than wait, you know, a moment more. You know, what do I do, Father? You know, what do I need to do to beat you?
You have this great moment.
And he talks about
moment.
How, you know, he left him Alfred. You know, Alfred is another one of your gifts you left me. I could ring this bell and Alfred would come. You know, he's got like a little bell, you know, to call for the butler. And he will clean my wound and everything will be okay. But that's when he says, like, you know, I'd rather die than wait another moment. And that's when we get that scene.
Yeah, I mean, because again, he's invoking, it's like that moment of doubt where it's like, again, he knows what he wants to do, but he doesn't know how to do it. And now he's doubting. And so he calls out to his father for guidance. And then that's when the bat, like, breaks through the window.
You get that great scene where the glass breaks and you see the image of the bat and every single shard of glass. And then he has that epiphany. He knows what he needs to do, and then he says, thank you, Father, and he reaches for the bell. And he doesn't ring it, but he reaches for it, and you know, he's Batman now.
Yeah,
now this is the moment he became Batman.
Yeah.
It's so badass.
But it goes on into the Bat. I mean, from there, it kind of goes into more of, I guess you'd say, like a more standard, like, story. I mean, again, if you've seen Batman Begins, you see some of the elements from that into this. One thing that they do touch on, and I know Nicole's favorite part was Catwoman.
I don't know. I have a hard time with how they portrayed her in this. That's what I did not care about this movie, was her whole story.
Well,
it felt like it was forced. It felt like it was forced. Like they just had to have her in there just so they could have some kind of other female issue into it, you know?
Well, I know that this was part of the original Batman Year One storyline, so it's not like they pulled it in for the video.
Yeah, it's to tell you from, I've read it, it's very, very, it's like, I mean, shot for shot, very close. If there's any changes, it's very minor. Like, I think some of the dialogue may have changed a little bit. Maybe there's something a little bit more risque they may have removed because it's a pretty, you know, adult story. I mean, and they got some edge, you know, in this. I mean, I'm not saying that they sugarcoated it because they didn't. I mean, Gordon, he has an affair in it, and they left that stuff in there.
But I will say that, largely to your point, Nicole, I mean, I do think that the Catwoman stuff was very forgettable. You know, it wasn't, it didn't seem to, I mean, again, the story became this parallel between Gordon and Bruce and their sort of journey.
It just felt out of place to me. And I don't like how they designed her. She, like I told you guys before, she had bigger shoulders than some of the guys. I'm like, this doesn't seem.
Well, I think I that's, like how, she typically didn't have like a full shirt on. I think she had a tank or something usually on.
I just don't care how she looked, you know.
You know, Catwoman in this story, this is the origin. I mean, there's been several different origins for Catwoman, but in this one, she was a prostitute.
The prostitute story, yeah.
And she, you know, after she sees Batman, she's sort of inspired to break out on her own. And she, you know, forms the Catwoman persona to become like a thief. And which is fine. I mean, that works.
And
I guess.
And that's really like the only reason that she's there. I mean, I think it's more she's there because they want to show that, hey, when Batman does his thing, it's more like, you know, all these crooks, you know, like the Joker and, you know, Two-Face and all this. None of them were there before Batman. The Batman comes in, he changes things. He sort of inspires. I mean, he's there to stop these people, but he sort of inspires these people to do these things too. And I think it's more that's why she's in the story. To parallel that and say, like, you know, this is sort of how he's changed things, you know.
It's the escalation of armaments, right? I mean, it's just like, you know, we built nuclear weapons, other countries built nuclear, you know, we make a big bomb, other countries try to make big bombs. You know, it's the same thing. And that story's been paralleled in Batman a lot. And I think that's maybe why it is kind of forgettable.
It just didn't seem like it sounded like, to me, it just felt like they need to expand the story because it was only an hour and 7 minutes long. And they just had to throw something in there.
They did expand the story. They did have, if you bought like the, I think like the special edition, you got a Catwoman short, which does tie in with Year One. I don't know if you've seen it or not.
Right.
You can probably find it like on YouTube or something if you want to watch it sometime.
Yeah, and I know there is more story there. It's just, you know, it wasn't touched upon in the main storyline. So, but overall, I mean, I felt like the animation was great. I thought that.
Yeah. Oh no, I thought it was fun. Like I said, I just did not care for the whole Catwoman story.
Yeah.
Besides that, I enjoyed the whole thing.
I mean, the voice acting wasn't like, it didn't blow me away, but it wasn't bad.
No. Yeah.
You know.
I mean, like the some of the people that they picked for it were, you know, pretty good. It's that territory where, like, you know, you've heard Kevin Conroy be Batman for so long. It's hard to hear somebody else do the voice, you know?
And yet there's so many more Batmans out there now. I mean, Kevin Conroy is really only doing, you know, very few Batman appearances. I mean, Arkham City, you know, he does that. He does, God, I don't know much else, really.
He's going to be in Justice League Doom. Like, it's like Batman that comes back every once in a while.
Yeah, for some of the animated films, I guess, when it's supposed to be, like, you know, a fully established, iconic Batman.
Yeah.
But I don't mind the guy that is from the Star Trek film that does him in Young Justice. I can't remember the actor's name, but I like that. But anyway, I digress. So, Year One, good stuff. Go watch it. Definitely check it out.
It's awesome. It's
good fun. There's things that are echoed, like I started to say before, like from Batman Begins, like the thing with the bats, like he makes the sonic device that attracts the bats, you know, and he talks about how he had to like fine tune and everything. So you see that in Batman Begins where he's in the building and attracts all the bats to kind of get him out. Well, he does the same thing in Year One, which is where they got it. I mean, you know.
In the ending, I mean, the ending's, you know, pretty much the end of Batman Begins. You know, Gordon waiting on top of the rooftop, talking about how, oh yeah, there's this guy, you know, he's threatening to poison the water supply. He's calling himself the Joker.
Yeah.
You know, I'm waiting on a friend tonight. I think he can help. You know, that's basically the end of Batman Begins. You know, I mean, because
It ties in right with it. So cool. Any other thoughts? No. Going twice. So okay, very good. All right.
Just be careful when you download from iTunes.
Yeah.
Why? Is there problems with that?
Yeah, the audio and the picture weren't synced up.
Ooh,
that's not good.
I hate when that happens.
I know.
So all right. Well, there you go. That's our show. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for joining us. Again, go to the website fanboyversus.com or follow us fanboyvs on Twitter. I have a Facebook fan page. I sometimes post there. You can follow that, I guess. Also go to tfradio.net for the main TF Radio Network website. We also have a Facebook for that, so you should check that out like that as well. If you do like video games, make sure you check out New Soundwave. They have a new Twitter feed for New Soundwave. I don't have it in front of me, but I should. But if you go to their website, I believe it's new underscore... Is it the news? I don't know.
I've got it right here. Let me pull it up real quick. It is... Loading. It is new underscore Soundwave.
There you go.
What it is.
So at new underscore Soundwave. Why am I telling you this? Because they're running a contest. If you sign up, if you join their Twitter feed, you can get entered to win, I believe it's 1,600 Microsoft points, which is
awesome.
Cool. Yeah, it's a good deal.
Yeah.
So definitely if you have an Xbox and so you want to check them out. So sign up for their Twitter feed.
That's like a $20 thing right there. Yeah. I mean, like, the points are wonky, but I think it's about $20 worth.
And, and they're doing
that's
good.
Awesome.
I've seen tweets coming out of them. They retweeted something I posted. So, good Twitter feed to follow if you like doing that kind of thing. So check that out as well. Anyway, that's our show. I guess Chris will be back next week. Chris McFeely will be back next week. And then, Nicole, you're not here next week, right?
No, I am giving a baby shower. Yes.
So... Hopefully
it's
you would do.
Duty
hopefully babies
do
get showers more than just like the once, you know, because it just seems like, But
if I have some leftover cake, I'll bring some to you the week after.
Sweet,
great. So we'll get week old cake that we can see.
There you go.
Yay.
There you go.
It's not quite the same. No. So.
I try.
I know. I appreciate it. I really, really do. So anyway, happy Halloween, kids. Have a good one. And please tune in next time when it'll be Fanboy versus...
This has been Fanboy versus... Visit us at tfradio.net for show notes and to subscribe to the podcast. Follow us on Twitter at TF Radio for news and updates. Like the podcast? Leave us feedback on iTunes. Copyright 2011, Radio Free Cybertron.